We're back with the Danger Room's 24 Days of Christmas. This year, we're doing one episode per affiliation, each with its own special guest. We made an effort this year to bring in some guests from all over the world. Sit back, listen, and Merry Christmas. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another Christmas episode of the Danger Room. And this time, I have Eric West. Eric, introduce yourself to listeners and tell them what you're playing.
Hey guys, my name is Eric. I've been gaming for about 20 years now. Started off with GW games just like everybody else, and then slowly switched to MCP because the models were pretty sweet, but haven't really looked back. But I'll be playing my Asgard today.
Yeah, like I was telling Eric before the cast, I was like stoked that he was doing well with Asgard and excited to talk about them because they don't get a lot of press these days, even though they did get a buffed Hela and a slightly buffed Thor, and they have Billin faction, but not many people are running them. I think they have some gas in the tank, though.
Yeah, I think they're really, like we were saying, underrepresented, and I think extremely misunderstood, too. Like, Thor is he's a misunderstood model, for sure. I think he gets such a bad rap for just being a terrible 5-threat, or an amazing 5-threat if he rolls well, but I think he could be a lot more if you just play him the correct way.
All right, so well, let's start with Thor. He's kind of the focal point of everything. So why are people playing Thor the wrong way, and how should they be playing him? Let's hear it.
Well, I think as soon as you read Thor's card, you're immediately looking at the six dice builder. And where it is amazing, Asgard falls really short with their dice manipulation. So time and time again, you'll see him roll terribly, and you're like, why am I bringing this 5-threat character that does nothing? However, I think after playing them for so long that Thor is a really good quarterback for the roster. You can keep him back, throw out his hammer to get shock and everybody else, which is incredible for a faction that has really high defenses to begin with. And then at the right time, that's when you can, you know, for Asgard and try and get your throws online. You can get some staggers going and really play that control game that I think Asgard really likes to play, but not a lot of people play it that way.
Yeah, so I've heard a lot of people talk about how the correct way to play Thor is sit back and chuck hammers at people. I will say, if Thor interacts and throws a hammer, he can't charge. So, like, do you find that that's enough output? Like, because you walk, throw a hammer, and then charge next round? Or
yeah, I guess it depends on the scenario and what I need Thor to do. Typically, I'm looking at my opponent's roster to see, do I need a stagger turn two? Do I need a throw turn two to play the scenario game? And then kind of go from there. You know, if I'm playing some factions that have a lot of rapid fire, then I'm just going to throw my hammers. Shock on rapid fire, the models do not like that at all. So it really depends on the roster that I'm facing. I think that Asgard, when you're playing Asgard, you need to definitely think on your feet more and play more reactive to the situation at hand rather than have a all the time game plan, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I maybe I'm being too one-dimensional, but yeah, if you see that your opponent has like a rapid fire model or Immortal Hulk or Cosmic Ghost Rider or regular Hulk or whatever, Thanos, like, yeah, walk range 5 throw is really far, and like, unless they want to leave the model in deployment zone, like, they're probably getting shocked.
Yeah, typically you want to have 3 power on turn 2, so interacting and throwing a hammer is not something I do a whole lot. It does happen occasionally, but it's definitely something you don't do a lot.
Yeah, thankfully the other Asgardians all generate 2 power, so they can probably like double interact, and they care a lot less about 3 power on round 2. Maybe Bill, but
yeah, absolutely.
Is there anything else about Thor? I mean, I guess we could keep moving on to the other stuff because it sounds like you've got some dice mods for him. So
yeah, well, I think it's important to understand that it's okay to not chuck Thor at your opponent right away. It's totally okay to have a turn where you just walk, throw, or walk, charge, and then hopefully have enough power for a throw. I think Asgard's strength is actually playing the scenario game and that control game to either throw, or sometimes you can push, depending on the models that you have in the roster, off points. And if you're playing your secures, which are always going to be pay to flips, then you're just always one step ahead than your opponent.
Yeah, cool. And then next up, we have Angela. I think Angela's better than people give her. Like, people like to rag on her because she has a six dice and also just misses a lot.
Yeah, I think Angela overall doesn't see the table quite a bit. I think she's incredibly good into other Guardians players or even maybe some criminal syndicates that are not playing Kingpin Potatoes. Going against the lower threat models is where Angela wants to be. I found her extremely strong into webs as well, being able to always have your size 4 throw online ready to go. And then all you need is a few chip damage after that to start your Angelic Assassin train rolling. So she's great. I enjoy her. I enjoy having another 5 threat in the roster, but she doesn't see the table as much as I would like.
Yeah. Are there any, she's probably just like a threat based, like if the threat works out, she comes in and like if she can midline grab.
Yeah, it depends on the scenario that I'm playing, but I actually like to play Angela in a lower threat game. I think overall Asgard likes to play lower threat than higher threat because we're always getting our tools in a lower threat game. And typically your opponent is having to cut some models that they don't want to cut to have to deal with your models. So she's typically in a lower threat game, and then just depends on who I'm playing. If they have some squishier models, then she will come out and hit the table.
We definitely should talk more about low threat for Asgard. I think that's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, next I got Beta Ray Bill. I mean, there's really not much to say about him. I think in Asgard, he's incredible, having the heal and then just another midline grab model that is super tanky. You know, size 4 throw, stun is incredible on his builder, and being able to throw out another shock. I think Asgard was really strong with their defenses, and then being able to shock opponent models also helps out that attrition game that they do like to play. It's not a style I like to play, but it definitely helps in the long run. But I mean, Bill is Bill.
Yep. He's a fun statistic is Bill has been in the winning squad of basically every event since he came out. And he's been in the winning squad of every TTS final since he's came out. And he was the only model that was taken in every WTC team. So expect to see Bill everywhere in every list.
Yeah, he's totally fine. Yeah, he doesn't need to be nerfed. He's all good. my next character I got is Hela. She's amazing since her current update. I think that Asgard was really missing a range 4 gun in their roster. And being able to have that online every turn is amazing. I think she's definitely a better midline grabber with Eyes on the Prize than Bill. She uses her power really well, and she also only needs 2 power to do everything in her kit. So testing her out in a lot of the scenario teams that I play with my pay to flips has always been great too. I mean, I played Hela before her buff because I really like the 4-4-4, and then also being able to auto heal on her flip side and having Odin's Blessing in the roster, it makes your roster incredibly difficult to KO, which is always good.
Yeah, Hela she's a pay-to-flip queen, in my opinion. She is so good there. The move, Death's Embrace can like actually move across the map B flank, which is really, really cool. She can flip over people with the 4 defense.
Yeah, it's nice to have. And I know I've heard her quite a bit on the other episodes that you guys have been having, and every single time I've heard that Hela's always outperforms than what you think. So it's nice to see. It's nice to see that she got a really good buff and that she's hitting the table more.
Yeah, I've played against her in Asgard, and she's extremely frustrating to deal with because the Death Embrace heals her and the leadership heals her. She doesn't have problems spending for leadership. And then she has the soul mechanic and Odin's Blessing. So it's like, you just can't kill her.
Yeah, you can't. It happens. Anything with Asgard, you can't be surprised when your models just randomly get dazed. But she is really defensively strong, and it just helps with any type of game scenario that you want to play.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, and like just experiencing Asgard from across the table, I feel like your squads basically should start with Thor, Bill, and Hela.
Yeah, it typically does when I'm making the rosters. It just depends on the threat as well. There's one threat that Asgard does not like to see, quite honestly, but we could talk about that later. Next I got is Rhino. Rhino is a model that I actually tested out for about a couple months now, and I've brought him in, cut him, and then I brought him back in again. I think Asgard really struggles with playing the steel scenario game. They have Enchantress, but you don't use the steel as much as you think you would. And being able to have a steel on a Rhino along with all his mobility is extremely strong for Asgard. He's also extremely defensive, and that really helps with the leadership as well, being able to heal that chip damage that he typically gets. Asgard's an affiliation that really struggles on the D-map, and Rhino is incredibly strong on the D-map. So you put two and two together, you're just going to bring them.
Yeah, it's probably like a greater meta thing that people feel like they need to have steels to compete in into like a Webs or a Hellfire, because just one bad dice roll and the Webs player gets away and you lose.
Yeah, it definitely depends on the roster that your opponent's playing. If they have mission objective, you're just not going to bring Rhino. But, you know, if there is quite a few extracts on the table, it's always good to have him. But he really sees the table just on a D map. Everything else, I'm actually playing typically all affiliated models, to be honest with you. The next I got is Heimdall. Heimdall is a model that I've heard quite a bit of negativity about, that he's got an amazing kit, but he can't feel it. And I am here to disagree. I think that the correct way to actually play Heimdall is as extremely aggressive as possible. Always having his rerolls online turn one is pretty great. And then coupling that with Forefend, so he could strike a model if they're placed or end a move within two of you, that can also get his kit going quite a bit. And I've found that Heimdall is best when you move him more to the midboard and allow him to take more damage to gain that power. The leadership helps to heal some of that chip damage that he'll take eventually, but being able to have a ton of rerolls along with the rerolls on the crisis helps the Asgardians hit the triggers that they want, like Thor's throw on a wild, and then also being able to play the scenario game and flip the points if you end up rolling pretty trashy for the pay to flips. So he's a model that sees the table actually for me quite a bit, and I've enjoyed him all the time I play him.
Yeah, I actually have played against Heimdall a couple times in the recent past, and he is really frustrating to deal with, because when he gets a bunch of power, he just can do a lot of things, and you can always like live on one against Thor, and then the throw moves you into Forefend and Heimdall kills you.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much control on the Asgardian character cards that being able to strike within range two comes up a lot more than you'd realize. It's really easy to miss, especially if you're playing Heimdall, because there's so much that you want to do. So understanding that you're going to always strike, typically, no matter what, to help finish off a character, it just helps so much with that attrition game that you might be playing.
So are you looking to Forefend out anything that comes in, like use it as much as possible, or is it more like I'm trying to be opportunistic with it?
I guess I would say it's a little bit of both, depending on what comes into range two. If I want them to have power, or if I don't want them to have power, like if I don't really care about it, then I'd Forefend. And then also more opportunistic if you're like looking for a simple chip damage to get through, like you said, if he's on one, like if a character is on one, Thor throws him into range two, then boom, you're going to get that Forefend, and typically you'll take him down. So it's nice. I mean, it's like Tricks and Traps or Killbox or anything like that. It's just a nice way to keep your opponent actually thinking more than anything else. If you do it once or twice, your opponent, I've found, starts to think about it more and more. And then that actually affects how they play against you, which I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, our Cabal episode was very tricks and traps focused, and I think it catches people off guard. I think Heimdall, Mysterio, Cassandra Nova, new Bucky, they all have a lot. Even Green Goblin, they have a lot of like, oh crap, and then your model dies.
Yeah, it's happened a few times, and it feels really good for a minute, and then you see your opponent's face, and it's like, oh, that actually doesn't feel too good, but I'll take it.
Oh man, killing models on their own turn is like the chef's kiss of MCP, in my opinion. Yeah,
totally agree. But I really enjoy him. I think rosters should look to actually play him a little bit more, especially as Guardians. I look at a lot of the other Asgard players and their rosters whenever they post them on Longshanks, and I don't see Heimdall used all too often, and I'm always concerned as to why. Why are you not using Heimdall?
Yeah, I don't see Heimdall at much at all. I mean, I've seen him pop up in Dormammu lists randomly, but that's about it. So yeah, maybe that's the key.
Yeah. The next I got is Scourge. I think Scourge is another underrepresented model that in Asgard, having another six dice attack, I mean, it's not a builder, it's just a gainer, but still having that six dice attack is really threatening. You know, another model that could throw size three. I can't throw characters, which is a bummer, but it's still pretty great to be able to, you know, walk, attack, and throw at any point in the game or in that turn that he's being utilized. But Scourge is actually really great for his taunt ability. I think that Asgard really thrives when your opponent is actually trying to chip a lot of characters away rather than focusing on one model. That helps with the leadership. So being able to taunt opponents and to hit Scourge allows your models like Thor or Bill or Hela to actually, you know, live longer throughout the game and play that control game more, because Scourge doesn't really play the control game. He just wants to kill.
Yeah, I like Scourge a lot. I think his attacks are crazy town for a three threat. Yeah, being able, like, I used to play a lot of Shield, and Asgard was a freaking nightmare matchup, because sometimes they just roll one to two blocks, and then the leadership heals the one damage they take, and I can't kill anything. And then Odin stops Helios, and it's like, oh my god, kill me.
Yeah, I think every roster that I ever put on the table, it's always starts with Thor, Bill, and Scourge, and then I go from there. Scourge is just an incredible piece for Asgard. Sometimes I'll take but the extra attack card just for some memes, but it doesn't actually see the table quite a bit with Scourge. But overall, he's always fun and pulls his weight more than you'd think.
Cool. And then you got a few splash characters here.
Yeah, so next I got the three threat OG. I think he is really great on the D-map and also helps the Asgardians stay alive more with the defensive reroll and then also with the offensive reroll to get their triggers going. Like I said earlier, Asgard does not have any type of dice manipulation, so having Zemo in there helps out quite a bit.
Yeah, I feel like now that the game is kind of maturing and Mystique, like Deception was nerfed, and I feel like a lot of teams are just defaulting to either three threat Zemo or Sam as their long mover, because AMG also just kind of stopped making long movers. They don't really make them ever at all. I think Spider-Woman and Shadowcat are like the only two in like the last like 3 years.
Yeah, I think he just helps the game plan really well. I mean, every roster could splash Zemo and feel good about it. So there's really no like Asgardian tech. It's just nice to have a reroll for him. Next character I got is actually one that I've been toying with over the past couple weeks, but it's Shuri. I think the game plan that I always like to play is that control style. Having Shuri be able to push models away to help secure points is pretty great. And then her reroll to help Thor, Angela, Bill, you know, any character that you need to hit a trigger or to get one or two damage through helps out quite a bit. I think that and then along with her spender to get that stagger, also having two models that can stagger on a roster can be pretty frustrating to play against.
Yeah, it makes sense. Shuri used to be played in Asgard a lot forever in the olden days. Not surprised to see her come back here.
Yeah, and then the next character I got is the honorary Asgardian of Wong. I think Wong for Asgard is kind of abusive with the leadership heel and then his heel. It just gets that defensive train rolling more and more throughout the game. And then also being able to shift power. I used to play R&D quite a bit, and then I moved away from that. But Wong being able to shift the power turn one to either Bill or Thor to get their throws or the charge going in specific situations can actually be pretty beneficial.
I like it. Yeah, I've played a lot. I used to have a local who plays a lot of Steve One with Thor, and he just move charge is very annoying to play against.
Yeah, it can be. It's so nice when that all the triggers go off. You get enough power for a throw, you hit a wild throw on the attack, and you also get stagger. I mean, that's the dream, but doesn't happen as often as you think.
Yeah, no, but it's definitely better than Thor's like walk turn, right? So we've seen a lot of Wong pop up in the game lately. I think people are finally realizing his merit, and he got a slight buff, and R&D is harder to take, so might be worth just playing the two threat. I mean, so we should talk about some characters that aren't here from Asgard, and the first one that comes to mind is Valkyrie.
Valk is a character that I have just been incredibly disappointed with time and time again. I think that if you're playing Valk, you're not playing a model that gives you any dice manipulation. So having turns where you whiff time and time again, it doesn't really play to the play style that I want to play, which is more of that control. I think that too often people that play Asgard just want to play that attrition and get their kills going right away. It's a valid tactic, but you'll find that it doesn't work all the time. And what does work is the throw and control more often than KOing models. So Valk is a model that I've had in and out of the roster. I'm a really big painter, and I actually just kept her in just because I like how she was painted, but I would never play her. So when you're looking at completely competitive gaming, if she's not going to see the table, I got to cut her. And I think that in terms of a three threat, Zemo versus Valk, Zemo brings way more to the whole roster and supporting Thor than Valk ever would.
So Valkyrie got nerfed forever ago. Her throw went to cost 3 from cost 2. Her openings used to be like move, throw, but now a lot of people are like move, charge. And if you whiff, you now can't throw on round 2. And I think her nerf is maybe making people play her wrong. I mean, obviously she's just less efficient, but I think people were more willing to be like, all right, I just move, throw with Valkyrie. But now people try to gamble on charge, build power, and then if they whiff, they can't do anything. So I'm not sure where Valkyrie lives at the moment. And then Enchantress is the other one, I think.
Yeah, she's a model that comes in and out quite a bit. Her control is pretty great, being able to Siren's Call models and, you know, off the point or into your beam town. I've just always found that she doesn't do as much as I'd like for her to do in my Asgardian rosters. She would really only see the table if I'm playing, you know, straight down the middle or a C, and I'd rather have Hela than Angela or than Enchantress. So, you know, the steel comes up every once in a while. It's not something that I'd use in every game. It would probably be every other. So, you know, her versus a Rhino, I'd rather just take Rhino.
Enchantress was hurt by her nerfs quite a bit. She wasn't as fortunate as Black Cat were. Black Cat got nerfed and buffed at the same time, and Enchantress just got flat nerfed.
Yeah. I mean, if she had some way to move other than Rainbow Bridge with the tactic card, then maybe. But, you know, a walk beam doesn't feel as good as just throwing 2 6 dice soul attacks from Hela.
Yeah. Hela gets a free move too. She has a Death Embrace, right? So yeah, Enchantress is, she's a little sad these days. I will say that Andy on the Cabal episode was playing Enchantress with Scourge and Meet My Executioner, and he seemed to get a lot of value out of that.
Yeah, it's something I've considered, but I've just never thrown it on the table, to be honest with you.
Fair enough. Oh, and Loki's our last affiliated model that's not here.
Yeah, I played Loki quite a bit before Bill came out. And then Bill came out and Loki really never saw the table. I think he's another great E-shape scenario guy. Being able to have your opponent's superpowers cost one more and then basically having a hex bubble when he's flipped is really great. I think he's a model that probably could make the roster, depending on if you want to make more cuts. But I don't know. I couldn't get the value out of him that I wanted in most of my games.
Yeah, I feel that. He can be... It can be hard to assess his actual value. I find, like, you... Like, the person playing Loki is like, he doesn't do anything. And then the person playing against Loki is like, oh my god, he's so annoying. So it could be hard to gauge whether he's useful or not, but...
Yeah, he was a lot of fun when Thanos wasn't nerfed. I had a lot of locals that would play Black Order, so throwing him on the table would just throw a wrench in that plan of doing the Black Portal so many times throughout one turn. So that was nice, but otherwise I don't really see much play with him.
Makes sense. And then we could move on to your tactics cards.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll just go ahead and read through them. So I got Brace, Sacrifice as the restricted, Odin's Blessing, Doom Prophecy, Mission Objective, Fallback, Mark for Death, Eyes on the Prize, This is a Rubbery, and Recalibration Matrix.
All right, so let's start with affiliate cards. I don't know if there's much to say about Odin's Blessing. I think it's just every game, right?
It's an incredible card that, yes, it's every game. And the best Asgard players are the ones that know when to use Odin's Blessing. And the longer you hold on to it, the more value it has to save your activations as much as possible. So it's really hard to actually figure out when to use it and when to just sleeve it. But once you do figure that out, you're going to really enjoy playing the roster and playing Asgard as much as possible.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's identical to Exceptional Healing, just different than what characters you can play it on. But typically when I play Exceptional or whatever, it's a lot of like, if I'm going to die on the healthy side, I usually just let it happen and I'll Exceptional on the injured side. Unless it's like just such an insane point swing to like activate a healthy model, then maybe I do that, but it's rare.
Yeah, it really depends on the situation and what you have. I totally agree about keeping a healthy model alive if they haven't activated yet. I think that's extremely important, but a lot of the characters have... Thor gets a little bit more buffed when he's on his flip side, so having that 8 health on the back is nice. But just being able to keep characters alive on their flip side for a little bit longer is always nice, and it helps with that control game that you want to be playing.
Yeah. And then we should talk about Doom Prophecy. I think Doom Prophecy is really good in Asgard, but I see a lot of people don't play it. So, I mean, you have it here, so sell people on it.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm a guy that doesn't play Doom Prophecy every game. I'm a very defensive type of player. So Doom Prophecy comes out when I know that I'm going to have less models than my opponent. And if the opponent's roster has a lot of squishy models, I don't really typically like to play my games hoping on dice, but Angela with Doom Prophecy is a drug that you just can't beat. Like, it's,
yeah.
It's
10 dice builders.
Yeah, I mean, typically you can get 3 of them with the Angelic Assassin, so that's typically when I'll play it, and it's a card that I'll play more late game versus early game. But like, Doom Prophecy into Guardians is just incredible. Even if they have CGR, it's, you know, you're only losing your physical defense, and Guardians don't have many physical attacks that they actually care about. So that's typically when I'll play it. But I mean, characters like Angela or even Scourge, it's really great on. I don't typically use it on Thor. I like to keep Thor alive as much as possible, but characters that I don't really need and I know are going to die, I'll throw it on them just to get that attrition going.
Dude, I'm not going to lie. I had a game when I was playing Shield into an Asgard player, and he brought Weapons of Midgard with Scourge, the beam card, and he Doom Prophesied Scourge and killed like my entire team.
That sounds like a dream that I wish I could have.
I was like, what is happening?
I'll be putting both of those cards into my under my pillow tonight for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I was like, oh, what? I was like, okay, he's just playing the silly meat and beam card. I was like, oh, wait, yeah. No, this is really bad.
I might have to consider that now. It might be like a fun game night sort of plan. Yeah, I think the only card that's missing out of the affiliated is Rainbow Bridge. And so Rainbow Bridge is great. However, 3 power on Asgardians is actually quite a bit. Typically, if you're, when you're playing Asgard, you just want to have three power on your models at all times. That's Odin's Blessing. That's all of their throws. That's a charge for Thor. So three power on Asgard is really the sweet spot. And having to spend that on a place is good, but you find with Asgard that you whiff quite a few of your attacks, and then you spend that power and now you don't have power to throw. I mean, you can't use it when you're holding an objective and most of the games you're playing four or five models. So most of your models will have objectives on them, so they can't really play the card at all. But I found it to be pretty good with Bill. I mean, Bill's a model that doesn't really have any way to get into the fight unless moving, or if his, you know, your opponents are attacking him so he can aggressive towards them. But that's typically when I would use it, but it's a card that I'd rather just cut versus a more generic card like Recal or Fallback.
Yeah, with the single, so like Rainbow Bridge used to let you teleport with X-Tracks, in which case it was broken. But even after the nerf, I still think it was decent when single X-Tracks existed, because if you're trying to chase somebody, that means you didn't have it, and that way you could teleport. But now that single X-Tracks are essentially gone, I definitely understand your point. I will say it's probably maybe useful on Researcher.
Yeah, Researcher's not bad, but I don't typically like to play Researcher in my roster, so.
But yeah, then it depends on, like, is this worth a slot in my 10, you know, so. And as with every list in MCP, we have Mission Objective and Fallback.
Yeah, I mean, I'm waiting for Fallback to get restricted, and Mission Objective is only for the Rhino block. It feels so good when your opponent forgets about it. And you just play Mission Objective. But, I mean, to be fair, I was playing Mission Objective before Rhino was even out. And just being able to pass an objective is just great for a team that already isn't playing as many models as you want, because the models are super high threat. So it is actually pretty good to keep in the roster for Asgard. And it's one that sees the table like every other game for me.
Yeah, I think this card will basically never leave my list, because of you, it feels like you need it into the scoring teams. They have too many, the VPs are too tight, and you need to be able to redirect the scoring as much as possible. And also just a lot of people play Rhino, right? And just being able to counterspell Rhino is really good.
Yeah, I mean, even having protection from Spider-Woman and Miles from their spenders, it's great.
And then we talked a bit about Brace and Sack, right? Maybe not.
No, I don't think so. I mean, Brace is Brace. You're going to always play it. Sacrifice is a card that I actually switch in and out for patch-up. I wouldn't fault any Asgardian player that plays patch-up. Sacrifice I've found to be a little more, it's a lot easier to play. Characters don't really want to be spending power to heal other characters. You don't really have power to spend on that, but like I said earlier, Asgard's a great roster if your opponent is going between models to attack rather than focusing on one. So Sacrifice definitely helps with that game plan, just to chip as many models down as possible and then just use your leadership to get that back.
You also have some cool synergies with redirecting attacks with Sacrifice. So you have Aggressive on Bill and Scourge and Rhino, all pretty cool. And Doom Prophecy, you can't patch up somebody who gets one shot because they're not rolling defense dice, but you can redirect it with Sacrifice. So yeah, I think it's a good choice.
Yeah, I mean, Brace and Sacrifice are cards that I bring every game. I don't care who I'm playing against. They're always going to be valuable.
For sure. Yeah, I've found with a lot of these interviews that people are basically between patch-up, Brace, Sacrifice. Like, it's pick two of those three, unless they're doing something weird with, like, R&D or Deception.
Yeah, so R&D is actually a card that I played quite a bit, and I found it to be more of a gimmick card. And it really lends to playing the turn one stuff for Thor and Bill to either charge or throw. And I found in the testing that if you're being super aggressive with Thor and Bill, you're going to lose them a lot earlier than you want. And they're both incredibly needed throughout the game, rather than like some leaders that, you know, can die pretty early. So Asgard's a roster that you really want to play more defensive, and Advanced R&D is just not a card that I think lends to that playstyle for Asgard.
Yeah, I mean, all it really gives you is like round one charge with Thor, right? Maybe if you're able, or I guess Wong can R&D, and then give out a bunch of power. So you could get like move, throw with Bill and move charge with Thor. I mean, maybe, but then you kind of need Wong to be on the table, and then you're like going double into like power jank. So
yeah, there's a lot you could do with it, but Wong could just do that by himself. You don't need to be giving a lot of people other power. You can just give one model power with Wong. So that's what I found.
And then Eyes on the Prize is here. I mean, you have both of the premier Eyes on the Prize models, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to threaten the D-shape or even just anything else. Having that, like, especially for Paranoia, being able to threaten pretty much everything on the table round one is really nice. It's a card that I'll never leave my roster.
Yeah, you can play it without priority in this list, which is kind of cool. So a lot of people can't do that. And then Robbery's here for Rhino. Not really surprised.
Yeah, you don't need to say anything.
it's Rhino's card. And then we got Recal Matrix here. I like Recal, but tell me about it.
Yeah, I found it to be another defensive tech card for your Asgardians that it's kind of like an Odin's Blessing Light, that if you don't want to use Odin's, but you know, you think you could survive on a Recal, you just play it. I mean, vice versa, it also helps to get Thor. You know, if he's got a turn where he eventually will whiff and be Fat Thor, then you can play Recal and hope for that wild throw. So that's typically when I'll play it. But it's a card that it'll make my roster more so if I'm playing a bigger threat like CGR or any type of Hulk or even Thanos. But it's not a card that it sees my 10 all the time.
Unfortunately, into CGR, even recalling his attacks is not super great. He gets to keep his skulls and just roll more dice. So, but yeah, no, I think using it offensively seems smart here. You have a lot of I feel like maybe that's what you've unlocked, is just having a lot of rewind, take backs, dice rerolls to get your stuff going. And then you're playing the pay to flips. You've Madman, Meteors, and Sword. I like this a lot, but if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, out of all the pay to flips that I'm playing in the roster, I think Madman is actually one that Asgard actually struggles with. The B shape is incredibly difficult for Asgard because they don't really flip the table as often or as well as you'd think they would. I mean, the medium bases are nice, but you know, it takes you a few turns to get there. It's not bad, but it's still one that's not as great. I mean, Meteors is great with having a lot of characters that have 4/4 or 4 energy and 4 physical. And then Sword is one that I actually stumbled upon when testing them out. And it's a crisis that nobody plays. So I found that actually when I'm playing it, most of my opponents don't know how to actually play the scenario the correct way or even like positioning wise. And playing inside the box on Sword is incredibly beneficial, and having characters like Bill and Hela on the medium base, being able to basically get to all of them in a turn or two to flip it is pretty incredible. So I think pay to flips with Asgard is amazing. You definitely don't want to be playing non-pay to flips. You can, but it's a huge strength being able to have 2 power, and the physical and energy defense is incredible. So it's a good match.
I actually played against a Asgard team. They were playing Bill, Thor, Hela, and Lizard on Sword, and I got creamed.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I think Asgard on Sword is really great. I mean, Thor, Bill, and then in that case, Lizard being able to throw or push all the models away just to get the sword flip. It just brings me joy.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if I would say any list wants to play Sword, but I was pretty convinced after that game that Asgard looked pretty good on it.
Yeah, it's a crisis that has never left my roster, and it'll always be there with Asgard no matter what.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you on Madman. I don't think you want to play Spider Portals, but you still kind of want to play pay to flip. So Madman's kind of the next one in the line. But yeah, not being able to play like 6 models, and since it's so spread out, it can be sketch into wider teams like X-Men or whatever.
Yeah, it just feels bad. It does. It's nice being able to abandon a Madman point if you flipped it already. So that's always good. And being able to flip-flop between, you know, the North and South Madmen, depending on which one you're playing, is always good as well. But the B shape is always difficult for Asgard.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I would say like maybe Rainbow Bridge can help mitigate that, but just like he's probably just not going to have the power to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, you typically don't. So, yeah, you just, I found to be more reactionary on Mad Men is really good. And then characters like Angela and Heimdall are also incredible. Heimdall being able to help you with the Peta flips, and Angela can actually flip the board state depending on which side she's in. So I like that actually quite a bit.
Do you find yourself using the Heimdall rerolls on the Peta flip rolls a lot?
It depends on if I'm able to get my throws off. If I'm getting my throws off and playing Asgard the correct way with the control, then no. I actually will use it more for rerolls on attacks to get the triggers. But if I miss the triggers, then yes, absolutely. It's incredible. Not being able to reroll a skull kind of hurts, but being able to reroll a sword flip is great. And, you know, typically when you're doing the reroll, you only need one to go through. So, and having two chances to do it with his two rerolls is always great too.
Yeah, no, I dig that. Extracts, we have Paranoia, Cubes, and Hammers. These are all like pretty down the middle, I think, in terms of like scoring. Cubes is a little faster, but you do have the healing, so.
Yeah, I actually like to play my Asgardians with fast scoring objectives with the Paranoia and Cubes. Hammers is just thematic, and it'll never leave my roster because it's thematic. And there's nothing better than having Thor throw 7-die builders or Scourge throwing a 7-die gainer. It just feels way too good. Paranoia is actually a crisis that I think is the best for Asgard in terms of extract. You suffer a damage if you pick it up outside of two of an ally character, but you can just heal that up within the next turn. So I found it to be pretty great. And you'll tend to have all your models cooped up with Asgard to get in range of a sacrifice or even in range of a taunt on your opponent. So I've always found it to be pretty great to get that extra VP. And then having characters that have a ton of throws, or even like Shuri with her push, is great to mitigate your opponent's extra VP. So just playing it more reactionary in that way helps score out most games pretty quickly with Paranoia.
Yeah, definitely having access to a lot of displacement is good on Paranoia, because like you don't even have to kill them to deny them VPs. Like you can just displace them, you know. Pretty cool when people realize that.
Yeah, and I think Paranoia is a crisis that not a lot of people like to play either, or it's not really that popular. And just running with the theme of Asgard's a roster that's not popular to begin with, so you typically catch your opponents off guard quite a bit.
Yeah, I've been running a lot of Paranoia in my list lately, and I used to not, and I would get caught on a lot of things like miscounting the scoring or miscounting how fast the game was going or whatever. But now that I've played it a bunch, I definitely feel a lot better on it, and I'm happy I did.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty fun crisis. I enjoy it quite a bit. I mean, the last one is Cubes. Cubes can go in and out for a lot of different things. I said it earlier that there's one scenario, or there's one threat that Asgard does not like, and that's actually 17. Cubes is nice, though, because you can heal the damage off of it and it gives you more power. So typically you can have one on Bill or Thor to have your throws online ready to go. But 17 threat is challenging for Asgard. You don't really, 17 and up, I like to play more five wide rosters than four wide. And in 17, if you're playing Thor, Bill, and Hela, then you either play two threats, which we only have one in my roster, or you play another four threat. I mean, I guess depending on the scenario, secure, if it's up down the middle or across the middle, then it's fine. But I don't feel good about that. So 17 is always one that I go back and forth on quite a bit of who I want to bring, because you're not going to be getting your core that you always like to.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting dilemma here, because you said you liked playing Asgard at lower threats. And Paranoia, you have Researcher, maybe don't want it. And then all you have left is 17s and plus and up, right? So,
yeah. So I don't actually mind Researcher. I think that my mindset was no to Researcher when Malekith was the boogeyman. But now that CGR is the boogeyman, I still don't like Researcher. But typically, I actually enjoy playing Asgard with a 15 or 16 threat. In a 15 or a 16, you could get Thor, Bill, and Hela. And then if it's 15, you just play Wong, or if it's 16, you play Scourge. I mean, 15, you can even do Thor, Bill, and two threes, and you're actually feeling really good. I think that the lower the threat, the harder it is for your opponent to bring down everything that you have. Most of the Asgardian models are a threat on the table no matter what, and the less toys that your opponent has to deal with all of your threats, the better you're going to be. So playing at the lower threats is just a really good sweet spot that I think more Asgardian players need to utilize to your advantage.
Yeah, I think that's maybe birthed from Hela being good, because I, like I said, I played against that 15 points of Asgard and it felt really strong. And I think they kind of had, they have everything with Thor, Bill, Hela, and just scaling up just brings more stuff. And like your opponent can definitely bring cooler stuff a lot of the time, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the your core is always going to be amazing and you're always going to have it at a 15 or 16, but the core for your opponents might not be as strong in the lower threats. So
yeah, something like a Web Warriors or whatever shield, they definitely don't want to play lower threats.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I had a game in at Second Wind and it was against shield and it was a lower threat game. And I think my opponent said that was the only threat that I did not want to play. And having that option in Asgard is always nice.
Yeah, 15 threats frustrating for shield in my experience, but that's a different conversation. If you're ever playing against shield and you can pick 15, do it. Yeah, sick. I mean, do you find having Paranoian Cubes is stressful into like any kind of Web Warriors or Hellfire Club or something like that?
Not necessarily. I will say that my local meta doesn't really have too many Hellfire or Web Warriors, so I guess my roster is a little skewed towards my local meta, but having so much movement with Thor being able to charge, Hela being able to do her Death's Embrace, Rhino always in the mix, Heimdall being able to place my models, I find that whenever my opponent tends to run away, I'm able to catch them. And having most of my models with throws and pretty sick attacks, I'm able to get those objectives off. And typically if I get the priority, I'll obviously be picking my Crisis and being able to have the Peta flips and leave them and then rotate the board to get to the extracts is always beneficial. And then, like you said earlier, having the ability to play eyes on two models, even if I lose priority, like in a Paranoia or even a Senators, is always incredible too.
Yeah, I could definitely. Yeah, I think if you win priority, you're feeling pretty good into those teams. It's always like the I lost prio play on their secures and they midline steal like the middle cube or something, and then it becomes stressful.
Yeah, it's always nice to have, even with cubes, being able to have Bill or Hela go take your opponent's cube is always not a bad idea. And then also having, you know, the Odin's Blessing or a fallback online as well, depending on, you know, if they're getting attacked or not. So there's ways to play around it with Asgard and being defensive. It's just finding the niche to play it that way.
Yeah, you can always, that's another thing, is you can park Bill and Hela right in the line of like the FX tracks so they can take your opponents, even if they take the middle, and probably can feel pretty good about definitely Bill surviving most of the time. So I've found that Hellfire struggles a lot if you run into their extracts and just take them. Like if they don't have the right models, they can't really punish you. I do have another thing about Deadly Meteors. I've been noticing Deadly Meteors popping up a lot in a lot of people's lists, and I feel like because Guardians have been so good on demons that it's forced people to move on from demons.
Yeah, I mean, Meteors is still right down the middle. It's just a different angle. I don't know, Meteors is actually one for whatever reason that it actually comes up the least whenever I'm picking my opponent picks my secures whenever we're, you know, choosing the three or the random secure. So, but it's still one that's great with Asgard. Having the four energy defense on all of your models is great. The throws. And then also the aggressive with Scourge and Bill is just amazing to get to your opponent's secures.
Plus, you can heal back the damage if you roll skull on the objective, right? So that helps too. Yeah, no, I love meteors in this list. I think it's great. And same with sword. Most lists tend to have two objectives they love, and then the third one is a compromise, but it's probably just good game design. Cool. Is there anything that I missed or that you want to talk about? Or
No, I think that overall, if you're looking to play Asgard, it's an affiliation that is extremely rewarding the more you play it. It's a frustrating affiliation because you're going to want to play Thor as he is in the comics or even in the movies. But my advice is to not play Thor that way and just play super defensive and learn how to use the leadership in the most effective way. I think the leadership actually drew me to the faction, being able to heal and actually being able to heal out of a different character's turn and when to use a heal versus something like a stagger heal, depending on what effect you want to heal, is something that a strong Asgardian player is going to use to their advantage. But a lot of the times whenever I talk to Asgardian players, I got like five or six that send me messages in Discord or asking me for some advice, and just keep sticking with it and practicing as much as you can with Thor and playing him back as much as possible and knowing when to use his for Asgard and when to just throw a hammer.
Yep. Good advice. I actually have some more things I want to ask you. How have you felt with Thor's buffs? How impactful do you feel like his changes have been?
Well, I think the shock is something that should have been on there to start. The stun actually has come up quite a bit, the amount of times that you play against an opponent Bill. So being immune to that stun is really nice. I've also found Mare Fisk to be more prevalent in at least my meta. I'm not sure about yours, but I've seen it come up quite a bit. So that's always nice to be able to play that secure and not feel too bad about getting a stun. The extra health has actually taken Thor to a whole new level. I think being able to be a little bit more aggressive and also not having to play Odin's Blessing on him earlier and being able to hold it more is actually really effective for him. I think his buffs are incredible, and I think that a few rosters should be playing him a little bit more.
Nice. Hell yeah. And then lastly, I want to ask, what kind of matchups do you feel you enjoy, or you're excited, you feel like you're advantage into, or vice versa?
I think any affiliation that is playing a ton of rapid fire, I feel pretty advantaged. I think having the shocks and the strength of, let's say, like Angela being able to KO or daze squishier models is really beneficial. Even rosters that are playing more of the up and down scenarios like demons or even gamma, I feel pretty good into. Being able to heal the incinerate is nice. Rosters like shield, I actually enjoy playing quite a bit. Even guardians, I feel that the Asgardians into CGR is not as bad as other affiliations are into him. Having the Odins or the sacrifice or even Scourge being able to take some damage is really nice. But those are the fights that I actually enjoy. Even the bigger boys, I don't mind playing because I have a few ways to stagger and throw a lot. I think that Asgard really struggles into, surprisingly, Criminal Syndicate and Crisis like Infinity Formula and any other D scenario. I think that the D scenario is the worst crisis for Asgard. They don't really want to have someone sitting on our back point and not being able to rotate as much as I would like is a problem for Asgard. You definitely have all the throws and the different ways to move models and score your points. However, if you're playing against Kingpin and him counting two, then that really hampers the strength and abilities of the Asgard to displace models, because it doesn't matter. They can just have another model come and walk, and now they're counting as two versus your one. So those are the factions that I struggle with quite a bit.
That makes sense. Yeah. The way to beat Kingpin is like cheap displacement models and Asgard's expensive displacement models.
And also, I mean, if they're playing potatoes like Rhino or even Lizard, their defensive tech is going to be way stronger than the amount of output that I have, because it typically doesn't happen as much. So that's more challenging than anything else I've ever played.
Cool. All right. As is tradition, I have my two questions for Christmas. What Marvel character are you most looking forward to be added to MCP?
With tradition, I'm going to name more than one. I'm going to go with Angel or Archangel, whichever you want to call him, with the mutants. I think that once he comes to the game, I will be jumping ship pretty quickly. And then his Guardian side, I would love to see the Warriors 3, like the Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos type. I think that would be incredible for Asgard moving forward.
Yeah, I think the Warriors 3 are perfect for getting like the Nick Fury Senior treatment. I think it's just perfect for them. And then Angel / Archangel came to Marvel Champions, and he is like a transforming character. He can shift between both forms, and it's really freaking cool. And I hope MCP does that for him. They give him two sculpts and he can play both.
Yeah, I think it'd be really sweet and beneficial for the game and more mutants, because you know they always need love.
Some would say otherwise, but yes, I agree.
Well, you know, they always need it for the fanboys.
That's right. And then Sploosh always wants to know, are you team heroes or team villains?
Totally team hero. Fat Thor all the way.
Hey man, Fat Thor saved the universe, the multiverse, that is.
He totally did. And he's still fat in my eyes.
Yeah, dude, he's just the inspiration for all the dads out there. You know, it's like, doesn't matter, man. You can still make a difference.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a middle school teacher, and I have no shame in enjoying that whatsoever.
Yeah, we've all been there. Fat Thor, he's great. Cool. All right, Eric, it was great to have you on and a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
And listeners, we will see you next time.